You're listening to DraftKings Network.
On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Follow David Sampson at David P. Sampson on Twitter. Support his podcast, Nothing Personal with David Sampson. Obviously, a very busy week for David Sampson as it's opening day today. We'll get into that and Marlins prospects, but you know where we have to start. Billy Gill foreshadowed it. This is kind of a tether to last week's show where I have to speak for the South Florida sports fan. When I ask you, David, Derek Jeter, not such a bad businessman. He got a naming rights deal. He succeeded where you failed. Loan Depot Park. Your response.
I'm really happy for the Marlins to have that stream of revenue. There is no doubt about that. We don't know exactly what the amount of the deal is. We don't know how long the deal is. What we do know is what we tried and budgeted was to find the $10 million partner. And we wanted $10 million just for the naming rights. And what you really have to do when you see a deal like this is you have to dig deep into it to understand it. Because when you put a team together, I discussed this on today's Nothing Personal already, but just to sum it up for you guys, when you put a ballpark together, you've got inventory. Think about with your show, you've got things you can sell. You only have one presenting sponsor. You can't sell that twice. And if you need to get $10 million for your presenting sponsorship, if you give them that presenting sponsorship, you get $10 million. But on top of that, they get 14 30-second ads during the course of your show. Those are 14 30-second ads that you can't sell to someone else. In baseball, it works the same way. If you give your naming rights partner 8 seats behind the plate that have a value of $500,000, that's $500,000 you can't get from 8 other people. Or if you give them a suite they can use that you would sell for $500,000, that's $500,000 that you can't get from a different person buying that suite because it's being given to your naming rights partner. So what baseball does is they go through the naming rights deal and they actually apportion an amount to the naming of the building. Then they apportion the amount of tickets, the amount of suites, the amount of food, the amount of giveaways. If I have to buy 2 bobbleheads, give out 20,000 bobbleheads, pay for it, and put Loan Depot on it, that means I'm not getting another company to do it. Outfield wall sign, same thing. Behind the plate signage, same thing. There's only 17 and a half innings of behind the plate signage in theory, sometimes 18 if you don't win a lot at home. If you give away 3 half innings of signage to your naming rights partner, that's again opportunity cost, money that you cannot get from someone else. I wanted $10 million straight up for naming rights, could never get it. And we always thought that instead of taking less, you basically wait and you wait. And the Marlins waited and they found a partner who had joined Major League Baseball as the presenting sponsor of the National League and American League Championship Series, a company that clearly wants to be in South Florida because it is a company made for the mortgages and the housing industry in South Florida. So it is a match made in heaven with Jeter and Loan Depot, and we just don't know. But it certainly is extra money, extra revenue, and it's a really good job that they got it done. You just have to wait to see how it all pans out.
Have you done some investigating, trying to figure out what the details of this deal are?
Oh, I'll be able to know by watching Marlins opening day, because I know exactly the naming rights signage that we had saved for naming rights. There was a spot behind the plate in between the fish tanks that where Marlins Park was, and that's where Loan Depot Park would go. But I also will look behind the plate to see what happens during in between any during the inning behind the plate signage. I'll look at the outfield. I'll look at the giveaways during the course of the year. I'm going to try to piece it together. There's no one who's allowed to talk to me in that organization, and there's no way they're going to reveal publicly what the deal is. You're never going to hear anything about term, anything about price. You're just going to know that a naming rights deal was done with a nice press conference. So I want to make sure that Billy is very clear about one thing. While I am happy for the Marlins and they did do something I didn't do, all I'm saying is let's get more info before we decide how great a deal it is. By definition, it's greater than any deal I did because I couldn't do one. But is it enough to make up for some lost revenue that the Marlins haven't had and to help them not have a $47 million payroll? Which, by the way, I get why they have it, because they've lost so much money. But time will tell what happens with this team. But I'm rooting for him, Billy. I promise you that.
Understanding that it's a placeholder value, right? You can't devalue what the naming rights might be on your books when you're budgeting things out. If you say this is worth $20 million, we're not going to budge for $5 million. It's worth $20 million. But what do you say to the argument? Just take the $5 million. It's $5 million more. That might have been what Derek Jeter did here. It may not be. He might have gotten what the full budget was for. And it's curious that you mentioned the fish tanks, because I saw those were removed, possibly to make room for more signage. But what do you make of that argument, David? That why don't you just, who cares? You've obviously overvalued it if you haven't been able to sell it in 10 years. Pick up the money that's on the ground.
It matters what cologne you're wearing. If your cologne reeks of desperation. So here's a real world story. If you own a house that you think is worth $400,000 and you put it on the market and the only bid you can get is $200,000, do you take that? Under what scenario do you take $200,000 for a house that's worth $400,000?
Desperation.
Desperation. That's it. Otherwise, you wait. You wait for the market to get better. You wait for the right buyer to come along. You wait for someone to relocate who's got kids, who wants to live in your exact area and your exact school system. You wait unless you can't. The question is, could the Marlins have waited longer? We don't know the answer. We don't know what their finances are, other than they've had a bunch of capital calls, other than they've lost way more money than they thought they would lose, other than the fact that their revenue and attendance, all of that is not rebounded under Jeter the way they thought it would once I was out of the picture. But you simply don't know the level of stench of their cologne.
Baseball enters this season, hopefully by playoff time, buildings are at full capacity and we get back to normal. What have you heard about the COVID protocol for fans this year? What do you like? What do you dislike?
Well, what's interesting is it is very rare to have a president come out before opening day and talk and say the things that Biden said yesterday. I was fascinated by it. He was very critical of Texas, and that's politically motivated, there's no doubt, but critical of Texas having a full stadium today. But I understand why. Texas has a new ballpark, and it was new last year, and there were no fans until the postseason, and it wasn't even their fans. So they've got to get some revenue back because they're not getting the new stadium bump that they projected they would get when they opened the new stadium by definition, and their team stinks. So I get why they're doing it. But if players are not vaccinated and fans are not vaccinated, there's going to be a very difficult time having certain states and certain municipalities allow for full stadia. However, I believe the way the vaccines are being distributed, even with what happened with J&J and some issues that could happen there going forward, the reality is that everyone is going to be eligible here shortly to get vaccinated. And baseball got ahead of it, Mikey. They said, hey, if you want to hang out on planes with your friends, if you want to take Uber, if you want to party, no problem. Get 85% of your team vaccinated and you can relax your COVID protocols. That was a very direct way of owners telling players in a union setting, do what we want because we need more revenue and get vaccinated.
NBA's probably been a bit more transparent. We find out about these vaccinations, not necessarily as they're happening, although we're seeing that a little bit more with a viral Lou Dort photo that went around yesterday. In your estimation, how many players in Major League Baseball clubhouses, what percentage of those clubhouses are vaccinated presently? Are they inching towards that 85% number you just laid out?
Inching toward, but not close. I think that you've got to, there's got to be education done. There's been a heck of a job done by anti-vaxxers and about people saying that the vaccine may not be safe. There may be no reason to take it. Why don't we just get it? It's only a flu. All the things that happened under the last administration have sort of bled into people in terms of what they think is real versus not real. And I think it's important for the union. And I'll tell you, if I were the president of a team still, I would be talking to my players. I'd be having the team doctor come in. I'd be having their team doctors. I'd be getting to agents, trying to get the players to understand the importance of being vaccinated, not just for them, but also for their families and for their teammates.
President Biden weighed in on Georgia's now very evidently racist voter suppression laws that they just signed in, and they're slated to host the All-Star Game, and President Biden supports moving the All-Star Game away from the state of Georgia. Your thoughts?
I just need a list from him of the states where we could have the game, because Georgia, let's be clear, is not the only state who is doing voter suppression through their legislature at the state level. It's happening all over the country right now. And I guess I can't drink Coca-Cola anymore. I can't watch CNN. And I certainly can't go to Braves games or do anything to possibly support anything that goes on in Atlanta, because the Braves should move out of Atlanta. Now, I'm saying that because I want to show you the difficulty in going down this road. If the president is going to start weighing in on things like the All-Star Game, which, by the way, is impossible to move, forget whether it should be moved. It is years of preparation to host an All-Star Game. You have to get a convention center that's available for a fan fest. You have to get thousands of hotel rooms for all of the people who come into your city. You have to have the mechanics of where players are going, where they're staying, how they're getting from place to place, where the parade is before the All-Star Game. The All-Star, the Home Run Derby, all of the events, all of the parties, all of that stuff is done in advance by years. We spent years planning for the 2017 All-Star Game. You can't just snap your fingers and move it. And it's a very dangerous precedent.
Why has the NBA been able to snap their fingers and move it? Because it's been moved twice in like the last 5 years.
Yeah, so the NBA is certainly more flexible in terms of how they operate and how they can get big events moved. Major League Baseball just has never been that way, and I've been a part of these big events. It is virtually impossible to move it on this short notice. The All-Star Game is already, well, the NBA did it, but the All-Star Game is coming up. What day are we? April 1st? It's coming up in 3 months. Mm-hmm. To go to a new city, first of all, how are you going to find a new city with a convention center, with the available hotel rooms on the exact 3-day period that you need to find it? I think it's going to be way harder than you think to do. And I just, while I agree, let me be clear here. What is going on in Georgia is a disgrace. And it is something, when you cannot give water or food to people online and you close voting booths at 5 p.m., you stop all the drop boxes and all the things, they're doing that for one reason, trying to stay red because Georgia is a swing state. We know this. But if people are going to boycott Georgia, get rid of the All-Star Game, as I said, stop watching CNN and stop drinking Coke, I think that you're asking companies to take positions where it is so deleterious to their business that it's not realistic. There's other things baseball can do, and they should do, by getting out the educational messaging to people in Georgia about what's happening so that people who voted for this can get voted out at the next election.
Baseball made it through last year. Almost didn't. It took it down to the wire. And remember, it wasn't too long ago that we had a COVID World Series controversy in which we basically needed the series to end when it did. Otherwise, who knows what would have happened. The Marlins were obviously a mess. The Cardinals were a mess. Several teams had outbreaks, and Major League Baseball was making the rules as they went. Hell, we expanded the playoffs moments before the first pitch of last season. What in David Sampson's mind is a successful MLB this season? And are we to see some of what we saw last year amidst a pandemic that, even though we're on a downward tick and vaccinations are going well presently, is this still something that you expect will pop its ugly head up?
Well, I'm trying to figure out the lineup that Jacob DeGrom is facing against the Nationals today. I don't know. Is Juan Soto one of the guys? Did he test positive? Is he one of the five guys unavailable? Because they've got a COVID outbreak potentially in Washington. Not Max Scherzer, we know that. And this was funny. I don't know if Max wanted this to be said, but it was reported that Max is fine because he didn't want to fly with the team. So he flew separately because he's in the last year of his huge deal and he got a private plane. And I don't blame him. He had his family with him. Way safer to be on a private plane than it is to be in a group of with players who, by the way, don't follow COVID protocols on team planes. They're all playing poker. They're all hanging out, not in their seats. So it is, we're starting off the season with another Nats issue. Do you remember last year Juan Soto didn't start the season?
Yep.
He had a positive test that wasn't positive. It was negative, but it looked positive. But then the protocols were such that they didn't know what to do because it was so early. So he sat out, even though he was totally healthy the entire time. Now we've advanced enough that we know when people are positive, they're actually positive. Testing is much more widespread, but it just shows that tests are down, which is why you may think numbers are down, but people are still getting COVID, which is why it's so critical to get vaccinated.
Especially with the variants out there. What are your expectations for the Marlins this season? They make the playoffs last year in an expanded playoff. Things are actually, I think anybody would say, things are going pretty well for Derek Jeter right now on the surface. New television deal, brand new naming rights deal, on the heels of a playoff appearance, expectations have been ratcheted up. What do you make of the Marlins this season?
This is a big year for them because someone could say that while 31-29 was great, getting to the expanded playoffs, it was 60 games, not 162. The problem with 162 is if you don't have depth, you're gonna lose 90 games, and that's what everyone's projecting the Marlins to do. The Marlins actually on today or yesterday's Nothing Personal, Mikey, I did my surprises of the year, and my National League surprise of the year is the Marlins are going to finish ahead of the Phillies. I still have the Marlins not winning the division, not making the playoffs, but I think the Phillies are just not as good a team as the Marlins. I love the Marlins pitching staff. If Jazz Chisholm, who won the second base job, he and Sixto Sanchez could actually compete for rookie of the year. These young pitchers are good and they're performing above their contract, which means this is the time for the Marlins to get better. So this is a critical year. I'm a little worried about their offense because they've got Marte, they've got Anderson. Maybe Cooper and Aguilar can be good, but it's just going to be tough for them to score runs. But boy, do I love their pitching staff.
Yeah, do you think some of these players in a short season, their stats may be inflated? You never know if some players start reverting to the mean. There are a couple of players that appeared to be punching above their weight class. I know Anderson was a highly touted prospect, but then we had a pretty good idea of what kind of player he would be, and then last season was good. Aguilar, I mean, this is a guy, I believe he was a former All-Star, so we tapped back into it. But do you think that some of these players may fall back down to earth?
The way we treat a 60-game season when you're an executive is the following. If you're the Brewers, you look at Christian Yelich's season, and you say 60 games doesn't matter. It's a 60-game part of a season. Christian Yelich can hit .205 for 60 games and still end the season hitting above .300 because he's an MVP player. If you, on the other hand, have a hitter or a pitcher who wins a Cy Young Award or has an amazing season, even though it's 60 games and you're the Indians with Bieber, and you say, you know what? This guy is going to win 20 games for us with an ERA of 2.05. And he can do it over 30 games because he did it over 12. So what you do is you take the 60-game sample, and if it's bad, you say it's only a sample. If it's good, you say it's totally representative. So you actually, within your team, can view the 60 games totally differently from player to player. And I know what the Marlins are doing because they talked about it their whole offseason. They viewed their 31-29 record. I think we were 31-29 over the years at some point in a 60-game stretch. But it's hard to maintain that over 162. But I think what the Marlins are saying is we did that. We're a year older, a year more experienced. Our pitching is still there. Our bullpen is going to be better now with some of the acquisitions we made. So we feel good about doing it over 162 games. But guess what? Baseball is the one sport where you cannot hide. 162 games will get you, and we'll see what happens with the Marlins. But everyone has their over-under in the high 60s, but I would take the over on that.
Francisco Lindor, massive, over $300 million in this deal that he signed with the Mets, with the New York Mets. Stevie Cohen making a splash.
Stevie Cohen is funny, right? He's tweeting about it. He's tweeting. He's crowdsourcing what he should pay Lindor. He offers him $325, said it's his last and final offer. I did an emergency Nothing Personal at midnight last night, and I said Steve Cohen is a winner because Lindor got 341, so he gets to say he got more than Tatis, who got 340, and that's all Lindor cared about, except Steve Cohen put deferrals in the deal, And when you discount back the deferrals, guess what that contract is worth? I bet you that that contract is worth exactly 325 over 10, and that that is the way that Steve Cohen could stay true to his word of not negotiating above his last and final offer, and he could give Lindor a victory by getting him $1 million notionally above Tatis. And now Mets fans can be happy. For me, the Mets didn't get better today than they were yesterday. Lindor was on the team. But this helps in terms of the 3 to 5 year window of winning a World Series, which is what Steve Cohen promised. And it also makes Corey Seager and Javi Baez and Trevor Story and Carlos Correa super, super happy today.
Is Lindor the kind of player that's worth that? And would you have done it if you were Stevie Cohen trying to make a splash with your new team?
I think he had no choice in his mind. 325 over 10 is a splash. You haven't lived with this guy except for spring training and had ravioli with him one time. You just don't know. But Lindor is a four-time All-Star, two-time Gold Glove. He just does it from both sides of the plate. He does it on the field. He's great in the clubhouse. He, to me, is the best shortstop in the game. The other shortstops who are free agents will slot in under him. Tatis is not even close to Lindor. As much fun as Tatis is, Tatis has done nothing in the big leagues. He's played, what, 143 games total? I mean, it's just not even
nothing. Nothing is kind of harsh. I mean, the Padres made it to the playoffs. He's the poster child. I think he's on the cover of video games. He's one
because
of the more marketable
great,
players. He
listen,
wants
I
it.
Love
he Mike, wants it, doesn't he?
He wants it. So make no mistake, Fernando Tatis is a great young player, but he is not Francisco Lindor. He's simply not. And what the Padres did by giving him that deal was a shock. And it was totally unnecessary, and it is highly unlikely that it's going to pay off. Lindor has proven it. He's gotten himself to free agency, and he is slotted in where he should be. That's how good Francisco Lindor is. On the other hand, the Mets didn't need to do it today, but Lindor was smart. He set a deadline, and all of a sudden, all the media is saying the deadline is April 1st, opening day. What deadline is that? I'll tell you what deadline that is. It's a joke. If Steve Cohen had offered $385 to Lindor on April 3rd, is Lindor going to say, I'm so sorry. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that. But it's past the deadline. I can't sign with you now. Give me a break.
We welcome in Dan Le Batard now, who I'm sure has some questions of his own. Dan, we've covered the All-Star game moving. We've covered David Sampson's failings as a president, Derek Jeter succeeding where David Sampson repeatedly failed. We've praised Derek Jeter as a president. And now we clear the floor for one Dan Le Batard.
Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink plus eight vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. Are you heading to the airport on a long flight? Or do you need something after your flag football game? Well, if I was you, I would definitely go with Liquid IV just for the electrolytes so you don't feel run down. And I know for me, Liquid IV helps me start my day in the morning, and it helps give me the energy to do stuff like cut my yard and wash my car and work out and just face the day. And you can get your energy back while drinking something that's delicious. And when I say delicious, you can pick from flavors like pear, white peach, green grape, lemon lime, and more. Liquid IV is non-GMO, free from gluten, dairy, and soy. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code DAN at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration using code DAN today at liquidiv.com.
Well, there's some sarcasm here as it relates to David that I would like to talk with him about, as also I bring in sort of the audience that's complaining that David's always got something negative to say. So not having been here, I don't actually know what your take was on the naming rights thing with the ballpark. But most people are assuming that you are so biased and so poisonous and so axe to grind that you're going to hate that no matter what. My initial thought on that with no information is the Marlins getting any money, no matter how they cheapen themselves. It could be like some porn site. No matter how they cheapen themselves, the Marlins getting any money in naming rights is something that's positive. Do I have it wrong?
No, you don't have it wrong. And I would have sold, I mean, Lone Depot Park was not my dream name when Marlins Park was built, but we would have named it anything. I mean, Pepsi Park would have been ideal, but they didn't get to the $10 million number. You like something that's sort of an alliteration that sounds good, that has a good nickname. I don't know what the nickname will be. I don't quite understand the small lowercase letters, the uppercase letters, the small P, the big D. But what you did miss, Dan, is I was complimentary of a naming rights deal of what Derek did. All I said is we need to know more about the deal to understand the value and whether or not it was a deal from desperation or a deal from strength. But they certainly found a Billy Corbin-like partner in Lone Depot, right? They just became the American League and National League Championship Series sponsor. They are the MLB national sponsor. And you know what they do for a living. They basically help people get homes where there could be a problem somewhere down the line. And Florida is somewhat familiar with that. As a matter of fact, there's this guy who made a movie called The Big Short, which was about something. I can't remember who did it. It was this guy, Adam something. And he did this movie which showed what can happen when too much money is given for properties where the properties are not worth that money and the people don't have an ability to hold those properties.
Would you have named Marlins Park Qatar Airways Park?
I tried. So it's funny. It's funny you say that because I tried with Qatar. I tried with Emirates. And I had to come to grips with the anti-Semitism. I had to come to grips with the misogyny. And it was a total sellout. But I was trying to actually, I put a premium. So here's what happened with those two deals. I put the sell your soul premium on the deal. That for Emirates or Qatar to be the deal, we budgeted 10. I had a 50% premium. The Nationals at the time were going for $20 million for their naming rights. The Mets had gotten $20 million from Citi Field. We had the Marlins slotted in at 10 for the Miami market, but for Qatar and Emirates, it would have to have been 15, and we could not get them there. And that was a tough thing to look in the mirror, but at the end of the day, as you very well know, it's just business.
Take me through all of this, though, because you said that flatly, and you said it sort of, you said it with your heart. It sounded like your heart was hurting on that one, because I haven't heard you chronicle many transactions that are more it's just business than that one where you're eating it, David, and you know you're selling your soul. Like, you know that you are making a business transaction that goes against emotionally everything you want to represent, that you're simply making a transaction for cash on your dignity. And have you ever made a charge that high, David, on any tax that you've asked somebody for? Because I can't imagine you would charge, as hard as it was for you guys to get money, I can't imagine you'd ever charge more than that tax right there.
And I love where your head's at, because the 50% number is a very high number, right? If you know that you've done the studies, you've hired the consultants, and you know the market is a $10 million market for a naming rights deal with the right partner, and you have traction with an airline who's trying to get a foothold in South Florida, in the United States, and you say that you'll only sit down for 15 and you can't get that done, where you may have been able to get it done for 10, and you have to sit down with your owner and sit down with your fan base and explain why your revenues are lower and why you've got to trade players because you stood on principle for a 50% premium. That is, listen, everything's got a price. And as much as I'd like to believe that's not the case, it is the case. For some, the price is infinity, but it's still a price. And for me, 50%, I've never had anything higher than that. There was a rumor that Bang Brothers wanted to be our naming rights partner. That actually wasn't allowed because when we negotiated the stadium deal, we had the right to name the ballpark. City of Miami and the County of Miami-Dade gave us that right, but there were two caveats. They said, you can name it whatever you want, you keep all the money, but it can't be pornography and it can't be tobacco. So it couldn't be like Parliament Park, and it couldn't be, you know, Vivid Video or Bang Brothers or whatever. And I fought that because I wanted everything open to me. And I thought, and I obviously didn't die on the hill, and it's something that we gave into at the end to get something else. But the county believed from the beginning that I would not allow any sort of carve out in the naming rights area because I wanted total flexibility. But Jeffrey had said to me off the record quietly, and I never told the county this, he said he will not allow any porn company to name the ballpark. So we gave in.
So you legitimately were in a meeting where you were arguing on behalf with people on behalf of naming it Bang Brothers Park?
Not the name Bang Brothers, the category of pornography. The category. Bang Brothers had not come to the forefront. All of that, it was in my head, of course, but Yes, I was arguing for the principle of complete revenue choice.
Okay, so the maximum cheapening of everything. Now, baseball would have never gone for this. Was there anyone in the room? How many people were in the room? And was there anyone in the room even close to your side of the argument?
My own people on my side were angry with me because I told them in a pre-meeting that we had a list. When you negotiate deals, you have a list of stuff that you're willing to give in on. And then that list is broken in two, stuff that you easily give in on and stuff that you will only give in on once you get something back in return. And everyone had the pornography carve out as something that you just easily give in on. And I agreed to that before the meeting. And then in the meeting, I went hard and I
there was a break in the,
there was a, oh. Okay. Good morning, everybody. I went at it in a way that made
phrasing.
People I was with. Okay, I guess just cut the tape. I'm gonna mute myself and tell the rest of the story.
It's negotiating.
So then,
negotiating 101, David. Right? You don't want to give something away if you think it has a perceived value, because you can just have something up your sleeve for the next thing that you have to give in on.
And here's the problem: if you allow the county to believe that they can start getting into your business about who the naming rights partner is, why does it stop there? Maybe they want to say over what concerts you have. Maybe they want to say in what events you have. Maybe they want to say in what your payroll is going to be. Maybe they want to say in who you can have as signage. So I did not want to give an inch for fear that they would ask for a foot.
I can't believe what you're saying, David. Seriously. What you're describing right now in terms of how these, and I'm not that naive, Dave. I understand that it's business at every turn, but the idea that there is a price on your principle on this stuff, the idea that you would be entertainment guy who says, of course, let's make it a porn site. We can get money. What difference does it make? It's all fun and games. We don't have to treat this as a holy thing. But you were in baseball, David. Like, they must have laughed you out of every room with those philosophies. Nobody agrees with you on that stuff. Like, nobody's Bill Veeck anymore.
In 2006, I was training for the Hawaii Ironman. And Jeffrey let me do the Ironman on one condition, that I would take my phone with me on my 7 or 8 hour bike rides. And during a workout, a long 100-mile bike ride, I got a call from Jeffrey because Dave Hyde, a local writer here in Florida, wrote an article where he released the fact that I was trying to get a sponsor of the Foul Poles. And I wanted a local strip club to be the sponsor of the Foul Poles because I thought that was a good match. And I thought we could get more than what we had budgeted because these companies wanted to have mainstream advertising. Dave Hyde writes an article about it. Jeffrey calls me. I had to get off the bike because normally if it's not a big deal, I can do it during the actual bike ride and just talk while biking. I got off the bike on the side of the road and got screamed at by Jeffrey for being the most inappropriate team president, for being the person. I said, Jeffrey, I'm trying to help you with money. He said, you are doing nothing but embarrassing us by saying that you're going to sell these poles. And this is now an article in the paper that we now have to deal with. He lost his mind. I thought it was perfect, and I would have done that in 1 second.
David, it's such an interesting tension because Loria, the art guy, is looking at that as this is David Sampson cheapening everything we're about while not noticing that your payroll was what was actually cheapening what everything was about. Your ultimate, the transactions that he would pull off in terms of basically having us believe that you guys got away with a scam and this baseball team, it's funny that that's where he would pick his fights on stuff. Not rejecting money with a reputation that he would never change. There was nothing he was ever going to do. Foul poles or no foul poles, why don't you just take the money? Everyone's going to hate you anyway.
I don't think he viewed himself that way. Remember, for him, he was writing checks out of 18 years. He wrote checks 15 of the years, and he signed players that where he went over budget all the time. And that's why we lost so much money and we could never deliver the revenue that was needed to have the payrolls we had. And we only did the fire sales or the payroll adjustments to gain payroll flexibility. Those were the words we'd used. We only did that when the core group we had was getting too expensive and wasn't winning.
How familiar are you with Sinclair Broadcast Group, David?
Familiar enough to know that they are the only game in town in Florida, and that is a major problem when you're trying to negotiate a TV deal.
How so?
there's no competition. There was nobody to bid for the Marlins TV rights.
Well, weren't you looking at streaming options? Because there are some examples in MLS, for example. I think LAFC has a deal with YouTube as their RSN. So were you trying to go outside the box? Because this monopoly in South Florida in terms of regional sports network has always existed. It's just gone from one entity to another.
It's to us, it's been the same entity. It started with Cablevision, then it went to Fox, and then it was renamed Sinclair, and now it's renamed Bally's. And for us, we always would sell them that we're going to start our own network is how we tried to get more TV money. And they would laugh at us and say, you can't get a network here. What are you going to, are we going to share it with the Heat? We've got the Heat locked up long term. You want to share it with the Panthers? The Panthers draw 0.0. You want to do it with the Tampa Bay Rays? Not going to happen. We've got the Rays locked up. And you can't really do it with two baseball teams. And by the way, do you know how much money it takes to start a network? You guys have a hard time keeping a payroll above 50. Who are you going to partner with? Where are you going to get the financing? So we tried to get any sort of lever that we could pull to get more TV money, and it just didn't work. And with the Marlins right now, they got their TV deal done, and a good deal, because any deal is a good deal that you can get in South Florida. It's just when you're dealing with one company only, they've got you over a barrel.
I want to make sure I understood that correctly. Were you reaching out to other professional sports teams in the area to see if you could present a bundle option to the RSN?
No, to do a network, not a bundle.
Wow, your own network, like the Mets have. And,
like SNY, like, yes. Yeah. The Dolphins wanted to start a network with us, except we were going to provide all the programming, and they wanted to own all of the network. Yeah. They were going to give us a little piece of it, and we said, that's ridiculous. You can't show your games on a local network. You're all national. Oh, but we can do ancillary program, pre-game shows, post-game shows. This is a football town, is what Stephen Ross would always say. And we never got a deal done there because it was laughable what the breakdown was going to be. It would have been better for us just to have a crappy rights fee deal with Fox, which is what we had, than to go down the network road with the Dolphins. But doing it with the Heat would have made a lot of sense because we saw that that could work. But the Heat were far more interested in the guaranteed money that came from Fox. And Fox was smart because by locking up the Heat and giving them what they wanted during the LeBron years and building that relationship and overpaying during a period of time when the Heat may not have been worth what they were getting paid, that gave loyalty between the Heat and Fox that exists to this day.
You can tell that a lot of the people that were in place back in the Fox days are still there now, but it's not just a name change. Ownership has gone from Fox to Disney, and then Disney has to divest, and they find there aren't many takers because they settle on Sinclair Broadcast Group, which has stepped into some controversy. Very conservative history, have actually put their news reporters at the forefront trying to fight on behalf of Don't Trust Anything, which is very curious for your news division. They're branded Bally's. I don't know if this is a lease agreement. I don't know all the details to it. Obviously, you can see a pretty wide open path here to integrate gambling. I'm sure that is part of the plan, but it's also a convenient shield for Sinclair because you don't have that branding out there and you don't have Sinclair broadcast splattered across NBA games when that runs counter to the political leanings of the NBA. How much say did sporting entities have in this deal?
Zero. In the rebranding from Sinclair to Bally's?
Well, I'm sure they actually gave input that they would prefer it be a different name than Sinclair.
No one cared more about having a different name than Sinclair. There was no chance Sinclair was going to brand the network's name Sinclair. It's just not what they're known for. It's not what they want to be associated with. They've got a totally different agenda. But are there any fans out there who, when they watch Fox Sports Florida, they're thinking about Fox News or they're thinking about Murdoch? They're just knowing they go to channel 650 or whatever it is on your cable system or wherever you're streaming. And yeah, it's Fox Sports Florida. The Marlins game is on at 710. That's really how people look at it. We would talk to fans a lot and try to figure out, is there any sort of brand equity in the name of the network? You know, it used to be called Sun, and then
Sunshine,
it was
Network, Sun
right?
Sports.
It went through all these iterations, like Dolphin Stadium, going to Dolphin, Dolphins, Landshark.
Some people still call it Joe Robbie.
And Joe Robbie. I mean, it's just funny that way. I think that fans are past that. I don't think that any fan will go to Marlins Park because it's now Lone Depot Park. And I don't think any fan won't go because it's called that. I don't think that anybody will not watch Marlins games because it's owned by Sinclair. And I don't think they will because they agree with Sinclair and therefore they're going to watch Marlins games or any of the other teams that have Sinclair broadcasting their games. I think people have a Chinese, there's a legal term called the Chinese wall, which is where you have one firm dealing with two entities that are opposed to each other. And the rule is you cannot communicate within your firm. There's literally a wall where no one knows what the other one is doing. I think that's how people view sports and politics when it comes to the name, at least, of their network.
Bally's a curious partnership. A lot of people only associate it with gyms, and that business is long gone. They're trying to rebrand and revive themselves as a pure gambling entity. This is a very smart play for Bally's. Tremendous play. What do you make of partnering with Bally's, which has its roots in gaming from the sidelines? What do you make of that?
Well, let's talk about what's going on in all of sports. You've got every league that, when I got into sports, gambling was you didn't talk about it. You just whispered. I tweeted something funny last night. At least it was funny to me. At the end of every spring training, there's a workout. There's an off day before opening day, and you do a workout. And before the workout, the assistant general manager, who for many years was Brian Chatton, he'd walk into the clubhouse. The players would like throw stuff at him. They'd sit in their chairs. They'd be on their phones, and he had to read the no gambling rule word for word. You don't just say, hey, guys, don't gamble. You actually, the rule is you have to read the entire rule. So he's sitting there reading for 5 minutes, and I'm in the clubhouse watching. The players are not paying attention. They're rolling their eyes. They're laughing. And gambling is just something that was never talked about. You couldn't have sponsors. You couldn't have the Native American casino sponsoring you. You couldn't have Vegas sponsoring you. None of that. And guess what? It's all over now. It's all over. Gambling has completely integrated with all sports. You are going to see sports books in ballparks around this country the way you do in Europe. And that is smart because it's a new revenue stream that will increase the value of every single underlying asset.
There was a curious headline circulating the internet yesterday that owners agreed to give Daniel Snyder full control. And it was me learning that there were other owners that had say within that organization. Didn't he already have full control?
Well, he had a larger percentage than everyone else, right? The minority owners just own whatever it is, 20%. Is it even 40%? They don't even have a path to control, do they?
There's nothing more limiting than being a limited partner in sports. You get fun stuff. You can maybe go to the clubhouse once in a while. You get to say at parties that, hey, I own a team. But you are not making personnel decisions. You're not making roster decisions. You get 4 board meetings a year. You get free swag 4 times. You get some seats, which you have to purchase. So it's not as though that this was a huge moment where Daniel Snyder is now in charge of the Washington football team. Dan Snyder has been in charge of the Washington football team since the minute he bought that team. All that happened is him and his family now own all of the underlying shares. But as the general partner, he was making the decisions this entire time.
When you look at the NFL new TV deal, David, do you study that as a guy who cares about these things? Did you say to yourself, this is where I would have done it differently? I was surprised that they went so mainstream, that they went so linear, that they did it the way that it largely did it the way it's usually done, as opposed to trying to go more streaming services, which is where everything is headed, even understanding that they went with some Amazon stuff.
By the way, Dan, they went total streaming. So the big part of this deal is that all of the streaming networks, which are huge, you've got Paramount Plus for CBS, you've got Peacock for NBC, you've got Amazon streaming, the Thursday night package, they leaned into streaming. What they couldn't do was keep owning their own streaming. As part of the linear TV deal, they had to give the streaming rights over to the networks who bid. That's how they got so much value, but they did go off the charts. They've been setting up this Amazon Thursday night deal for years, and they finally cashed in. They started the whole NFL network only so there could be a streaming deal like Amazon just did. It's the reason MLB Network started. They wanted to create competition so when it comes time to sell their broadcast deals, that they could use and hold out MLB Network as a potential place to show games.
Smart. So it was all smart. You looked at it and thought it 100% of it was smart. My bad. I do not know television rights deals. And so when I was reading about it, I was looking at it and saying, man, this is a lot of linear television. But yeah, you're right. All of those televisions that are doing it, all of those networks that are doing it that way are transitioning into streaming.
you know how big ESPN Plus is for Disney? It's a critical part. And now ESPN Plus is going to have football games. So Peacock Plus, all of them. Streaming is where it's at. That is why do you think how people are listening to us right now? Right. We are not, they're not looking at us, or maybe they are. I don't know if you guys do a video component, but streaming is exactly what, that's why I'm wearing a blazer. Streaming is exactly important because you have to go to the customer. The customer is not coming to you anymore.
Rusty Harden popped back up. This will give me another opportunity to point out his hair system. Rusty Harden came out with the Deshaun Watson defense of, there's a very curious angle from this. I know athletes get a lot of massage therapy, but putting out a list of 18 massage therapists that back up Deshaun Watson, saying he treated them with respect, was a curious defense. What did you make of it?
We were talking about the cologne of desperation earlier. That statement by Harden smells so badly that even me with no taste and smell, I could smell the desperation that Rusty Harden feels and the nervousness he feels about a potential grand jury situation and starting to line up character witnesses to go into the grand jury or to go before a civil jury and say, I gave him a massage and there was total coverage. I never was threatened in any way. I never cried. I never felt upset. I was never mistreated in any way. And the jury will say, does that mean that if someone is charged with bullying, I said this on Twitter, if you are charged with robbing a bank, do you bring in 20 banks who you didn't rob and say, look, he didn't rob these banks, so we couldn't have robbed that bank? Or if you've bullied someone, do you bring in 20 people who the bully didn't bully and say, therefore he's not a bully? It's absurd. And the only reason a defense attorney does what Rusty Harden did now is when he knows the facts of the case and he does not like where he stands.
It's an interesting way to muddy the waters, though, right? Because you're just, we can all look at that and be like, "What? Why would you have to go through that many different massage therapists? That's a curious thing to volunteer to us." But if what you're trying to do is like, hey, this isn't every time that he's treating this as uber sex he's calling. It's something that maybe half of these women have it confused because the other half of the women are telling you, or the other half of the people, because I don't even know if they're all
right,
women.
But how good of a defense is that? Maybe it's not every time he does this with a massage therapist. I see someone that has a roster of 50 massage therapists, and I'm like, that person's a weirdo.
Oh, Mike, but I'm not saying it's a good defense. I'm saying it's the least bad of the defenses here. As opposed to what, David? You've got 20 on the other side saying
every... I guess. Innocence would have been the preferred option.
Yes, of course, but you've got 20 on the other side arguing that every time I met with him, this is what was expected. It was 100%. And when you have that many women, you've got to do something. So it's desperation, but it's needed desperation.
Why is it needed now, Dan? I'm not following your train of thought. Was it needed because all the lawsuits keep coming? Was it needed because there's a rumor that he was deleting his Instagram messages? Is it a rumor because the Texans are trying to trade him and see if they can get value for him, and that's why they had to do it now? What exactly is your reason that now was the time for him to roll out 18 women who he didn't have a problem,
More women. It's more women is what I would say to you. He's throwing 18. Here's 18 reasonable doubts for you. And please, let's, if 20 more women are coming forward, well, what does that mean? I just gave you 18 who said the other side. David, I'm not saying it's a good argument. I'm saying it's the least of the bad arguments.
And I'm saying that if you only have the least of the bad arguments, then you don't make them right now. You save the least of the bad arguments for when you are back up against the wall and the jury has been convened and you are putting your list together of character witnesses and defense witnesses.
Chew on this. Maybe say nothing. Because I think nothing might have been better than what we saw yesterday. Of like, wow, Deshaun Watson goes to scores of massage therapists at this point. Perhaps just keeping things as they are. Making you pay attention to opening day. Making you pay attention to all the other exciting things in sports. Talking about Lindor, other than the fact that, hey, 18 people corroborated Deshaun Watson as an upstanding young client.
You know what? Fair enough. The least of the bad options would be silence. That was one of the options. And I'm assuming that Rusty Harden, though, in that hairpiece isn't going to stay silent. Like, I'm assuming that
hair... That's what he's paying for. He's billing for that.
I mean, that's a very expensive mistake you guys are pointing out there. If you guys are telling me that simply silence would have been better than that.
there's a rule that you learn in law school, and that when you practice law, and it's hard to do, it's the rule of silence, and it's the rule of only answering the question that is asked of you. So here's the example that you're given in law school. When someone says to you, do you have the time? What you're supposed to say is yes. What 99% of the people say is, when asked, do you have the time? They say, yes, it's 3:20. And that is incorrect. You are then giving more information than is required by the question. So when you prep witnesses, or you prep your client who is a defendant in a lawsuit or criminal or civil, you try to teach them less is always more. Because what prosecutors do, or plaintiff's attorneys do, is they wait for you to keep talking. That's why it's not exciting TV, because they'll pause a lot. They'll just look at you quietly. And most people are super uncomfortable in silence. So they just start talking. And then all of a sudden you say something and boom, you have contradicted something you've said before and you're totally screwed.
I wonder if what you're saying might actually hold water, that Russi Harden might be afraid of something that's coming, like a grand jury thing, because it seems as though right now the motivation is to win over the public in the court of public opinion. And that tactic yesterday was a big fat L for Deshaun Watson in the court of public opinion.
Yeah, when you're in trouble the way Deshaun is, the court of public opinion becomes the last court that you're interested in. When it's not something related to sexual predator, or if it's something, some sort of lesser issue that is not the topic du jour, which should always be the topic du jour, but it hasn't been, then you can act the way that you're saying he's acting. But in this case, that was just an interesting strategic move. I wonder whether Deshaun Watson said to him, listen, I'm giving you a list of 18 women here and I've spoken to them. Wink, wink. I promise you they're going to say good things. You got to talk to them. Let them say good things to you without me on the phone. And then we got to get that out there. I'm getting crushed here every day. You got to help me, Rusty. And Rusty may have just said, I don't think this is the right move, Deshaun. And sometimes the client makes lawyers do things they don't want to do.
Personal experience time. I had a situation with Inter Miami yesterday. I'm a season ticket holder, have been for 2 years, fully paid, provided my money to this organization at a 0% loan, and they've appreciated my business. They're hoping by match week 4 that they can have a full capacity stadium. Let's separate that from this story right now. But the problem is, for the first 3 weeks, including match week 1, a game that several local soccer fans have been waiting a decade for, they have limited capacity. I ordered a very specific package, a club level with amenities and seats. I was told that those seats weren't available. There was very little information for me as a season seat holder. I was finding things out via an email. There was a very ambiguous priority window for me to sign up for, and I didn't have answers to very basic questions. Do I get my parking? Do I get the free beer? Do I get food? Do I get cola with this package? Because that was all part of it. Do I even get my seats? I was called after several emails by my rep, who has actually handled this perfectly. The problem is not with the rep. The problem is probably, if there is a problem, from the top. They told me that my seats weren't available. Part of the problem, I got two different explanations, David. I was told by the sales manager that I spoke to eventually that MLS was blocking these seats off. And I was told by another person that, well, the suites aren't available because of this pandemic, so we had to move people into other levels. And obviously, you go down the totem pole, and I guess suite holders spend the most money, so they're your top priority. I was entering a situation which my seats weren't available to me, but if I went to the game, I would be looking at my seats and someone else would be in my seats. Now, here's the real catch. 40 minutes after this window opens, I get called by my rep, and I'm like, okay, well, can I get two seats that are comparable? I was going to go with my wife and sit my daughter on my lap. All the packages of two pods are gone. You either have to get an additional third seat, or one seat here, one seat there. It was just a mess. So then you know what I did, David? I took to Twitter, and I got results, David. I complained, I tagged Inter Miami, and shortly thereafter, a sales manager called me with two seats in the next section over in the club level. It's not my exact seats, but heck, it's a row closer. What do you make of my experience?
I think that you took your power out for a walk, and the Inter Miami people did exactly what companies do all the time, is the squeaky wheel gets the oil. And what you did is you said, if you had 1,000 followers and you did not have the number one podcast in the world, you would not have gotten that call, because there are several hundred of you out there in that same position who, when you went to Twitter and you got results, they're now trying to get those same results. And I'd like you to go to Twitter again and ask for anyone to get back to you who is in your position, who tried to get the result you got but didn't. And I'll bet you a dollar that they didn't get it.
A dollar, ladies and gentlemen. A dollar has been
bet. You're on.
The betting stakes have been raised. He did say the gambling money was coming to sports, and now he has bet a dollar.
I will say everything is as I laid it out. Inter Miami did right by me, and their customer service was good. It took them a minute. I don't know if they put two and two together, but I really hope sincerely that my account is now notated. Take care of me.
Hold on. Are you saying that you think you got taken care of having nothing to do with the fact that you took to Twitter? That it's just a coincidence that you got two seats one row closer in the same club section and it had nothing to do with you being the producer of the number one rated podcast in the country? I'm just asking. Your name was what? Pulled out of a hat? We're going to reward one guy and help him out?
Wait a minute. Does Mike Ryan think he didn't just inappropriately use his power? Is Mike Ryan in all...
It can't be that he's saying that.
In all that yammering that Mike Ryan just did, there's simply no way that, he did it with that level of lacking self-awareness.
Guys, just knowing what you know about how this whole Inter Miami thing has gone over the last 10 years, it is entirely plausible that they're never going to hear this file, that the story will never get back to them, and they still have no idea who I am. It is entirely, in my experience, no one, my name has got me nothing there. Believe me, I am treated like every other Joe, and I got sick and tired of it, and I took my power for a walk.
He does think, David, I can't believe that this is where we arrived. Mike Ryan thinks that he complained that the lonely voice of the fan, that he rose up as the voice of the little guy, and didn't have the number one sports podcast in America.
There's nothing more off-putting than pretending you're the voice of the fan when you're not.
That's how I've opened the show the last 2 weeks. And wait, haven't you called yourself the voice of the fan?
What are we reviewing for movies? Did you watch Tina on HBO? The Tina Turner story is amazing.
No, I have not. I will watch that. I do want to watch that. I watched Justice League. I don't want to review that. I want to review a documentary about the art world, and it's called Make Me Whole, and it is about the fraud in the art market. A fascinating documentary which talks about how a piece of art is worth exactly what someone will pay for it. Sort of like a house or a car or a team or a player. Someone is worth what someone else will pay for that. But what happens when you think you're buying a Rothko, and in fact, which is a great abstract expressionist, but in fact, you're buying something done by your daughter. What do? Do you get your money back? Do you put it up in a museum and say it's a Mark Rothko? There is a whole world of art fraud out there. And I watched this movie and I kept thinking to myself, this is a dream come true for people who go to art museums around the world and say, my kid could do that. They look at Jackson Pollock and say, who couldn't splatter paint on a canvas like this? Or remember the banana at the Art Fair in Miami, at Miami Art Basel? Someone put like a banana on the wall and someone bought it. So this is a documentary where you can learn a little bit about the art world and realize that if you're spending money on, let's just say, digital art, or let's say you're involved in some Top Shot or maybe some stock in some companies that are flying like GameStop, just always be careful what you're buying because sometimes you may be buying an Etch-a-Sketch.
David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal. Thank you for joining us this week. As you do every week, make sure to support Nothing Personal and follow David Sampson at David P. Sampson on Twitter. We'll talk to you next week.